Hello, everybody. My name is Tim Shu, and I'm from Denmark. And I have the honor of having a conversation here with Building Bridges.
Take it away.
Welcome to Building Bridges. I'm Sebi.
And I'm Dave.
And this is a Eurovision podcast for the rest of us. So today we build a bridge to Denmark because we are speaking with Tim Shu, who has represented Denmark as the front singer of A Friend in London in Eurovision 2011. And now he's back at Dansk Melodi Grand Prix, and he might return to Eurovision. And if you listen to this episode, you're going to know this is very exciting for me because he was one of my first artists that I saw in Eurovision when it happened, because 2011 was my first Eurovision. So yeah, it was very interesting to see how his life changed and what he's up to now.
He's definitely not the, what was he, 23-year-old that he was back on the stage in Dusseldorf. His first real kick at trying to get back to Eurovision in 14 years. I mean, it's pretty impressive. Because, I mean, in my head anyway, Dusseldorf doesn't seem that long ago. But a lot has changed, so has Tim. And I guess before we start the episode, we should have a quick listen to a little bit of Proud.
So this was Proud, and now we are going to talk to Tim about how the song was created and his rough way in between. And also, I am going to find my own doppelganger in this episode. So let's hear from Tim.
Yeah, so again, thanks Tim for joining us. And before we get into talking about this year, of course, I'm sure most of our listeners would remember you from 2011 from Dusseldorf. And getting one of Denmark's best ever results. It's hard to believe it's been 14 years. Like, do any memories stick out in your mind when you think back to that year and that Eurovision?
Oh, man. Definitely a fantastic after party. That's like, I just remember the after party being such a rush of pure joy and love and partying. Like, we partied hard back in 2011, but like you said, it's been almost a lifetime, you know. It's 14 years, at least for me, going from being like a 23 year old kid into adulthood of now 37, you know. It's two very different times in life. So yeah, but like, yeah, the after party definitely stands out.
I think for me is when you would get the 12 points and they would put the camera in your face, you had the drink in your hand, you're going, I fucking love you over and over. And of course, it's too fast, they couldn't bleep it out, but oh well.
I appreciate that you actually somehow censored that story with saying that I had said, I fucking love you, because I do believe I did say something a bit different, but people can go check that out on YouTube if they want.
I think so too. I think I remember what it was.
Yeah. I was being polite. Yeah.
You were. Oh, the Canadians, they're so polite. I'm not meaning to hijack your interview here, but how is it that, like, for a Canadian, that you're so interested in Eurovision? That's so cool.
I found it a few years after, actually. I found it when Conchita won in Copenhagen, actually. Because that made the news. I saw it on CBC and I said, what's this Eurovision thing? Because I've studied European history, European languages my whole life, and said, like, how do I not know what this is? And very quickly got addicted, and now here we are.
Awesome. I actually had the honor of presenting Conchita when she won at the Euro Club at Vega, the venue Vega in Copenhagen, the year she won. Right after she had won, she came over to the venue, and I had just played a song, and I was presenting her on stage. So that was a cool moment too.
Yeah.
Wow. I can imagine. Yeah, it said you were 23 back then. I'm 23 now, and I remember 2011 was the first contest that I watched live, and you were like, you know, one of my childhood heroes in that sense, because 2011 was also the year that got me hooked into Eurovision, and now I'm here talking to you, so that's how life
goes. That's a full circle, full circle.
But that's of course, awesome. You answered our question a little bit already, but have you been following Eurovision after your own participation, and how does it feel to watch Eurovision after having been there in the green room, on the stage, everything?
Yeah, so like for me, after the 2011 participation, we obviously, the band and I, we toured a lot. We kept touring. We had been like together for 7 or 8 years before the Eurovision happened. So we went on like a tour around in Europe where we got to play like all the big arenas and played with big bands like Backstreet Boys and New Kids on the Block and Simple Plan, if you guys remember those 90s bands. Like, so a lot of cool things happened. So it was a natural way to also kind of step out a little bit from the bubble of Eurovision. So we didn't keep track of Eurovision for like a couple of years after we had done it. But then slowly I started writing songs for other artists while working on my own solo career and my own solo album. And so I would start having songs in the competition as a songwriter, both in Denmark, but I also had the pleasure of trying out for Germany and for Sweden. So somewhere down the line, I started getting very involved again with the whole Eurovision thing, but mainly on the side, which was a very nice way for me to sort of not stick my neck out too much for being back in Eurovision and making that whole statement, but being able to, like, you know, look at it from afar and see what the development and the evolvement of the competition was. And, you know, I think somewhere down the line I just stopped and looked at it, and I was like, there was like this little bug under my skin just crawling, and it looked like a Eurovision bug, and I was like, okay, this is it's time. It's time to come back.
Yeah,
Sorry, Sebi, you go on.
No, I think it's a really interesting time, because when you were in 2011, when you competed, it was obviously a very successful era for Denmark in Eurovision. And right now it's, I would say, a pretty dry era for Denmark. I think that's, you know, exactly. So why do you think that is? What do you think happened in Denmark or in the Danish music scene?
Oh, man. That's a tough conversation, I guess, because like at the same time, I don't want to bash anybody. But like, obviously, like the show, you can't always just like let it come down to the music, because the show is very much also about, it is about politics, whether or not you want to admit it. It's also about politics. It's about what countries like each other and the neighbors we have, and, you know. So there's a lot of things going into it. Denmark is a very small country. I don't know. Like, I think for, at least I can only speak for what worked for us in 2011. And I think it was the authenticity that we brought to the table, being these four young lads who were just so appreciative of the opportunity and so happy about being on stage. I think that really sat well with the audience, and they could see that we were for real, that it wasn't just like a, oh, okay, let's get 15 minutes of fame, but this was like a real thing. So yeah. I hope I answered that question without, like, very diplomatic.
It's very diplomatic. Yeah, you didn't bash anybody. That's good.
Yeah. And it's tough because a lot of people have asked that. Like, Copenhagen obviously hosted such a beautiful Eurovision in 2014, just after Emily DeForest won. And it seems like since then you lost your mojo. And, and it's hard to pinpoint. Is the broadcaster need to pick better songs? Is it the stage? Like, there's so many things, and yeah, it's tough if you're not from Denmark to figure out like what happens to a country when they do hit one of these rough patches. But
yeah,
anyway,
sure.
we hope this year things start to improve. Obviously,
sure.
Yeah, and obviously we've listened to Proud, and we've read the blurb that came out with it. It's obviously very personal to you. And when A Friend in London split, you took off, right? You sold your apartment and you went on these world travels. So was Proud created on one of these journeys, or what did that come later?
That came later. Proud was actually created for the purpose of re-entering the Eurovision bubble. So for my whole journey of those couch surfing days, it was actually a New Year's resolution in 2015, I believe, where I was, you know, after we had toured with A Friend in London and we had pretty much like done the, you know, checked all the boxes of what our childhood goals were. It sort of for me became a situation of like I was doing a lot of TV shows that all of a sudden didn't really have a lot to do with music or with being a musician. And I needed somehow to take a step back from that and reconnect with my, I guess you can call it artistry, or reconnect with the 17-year-old me who had a dream of writing songs and making a living off of my own songs. And so I took a step back and I made a New Year's resolution. I'm going to sell my apartment and I'm going to say no to anything that doesn't have to do with my own music. So that could be anything from theater to TV shows, reality things or whatnot that paid a big amount of money but didn't really do anything for my dream. So I spent the New Year's resolution turned into like a 7-year couch surfing journey where I just were trying to rediscover myself as a musician and as a solo artist. And then I think after that whole self-discovery, I just came to face the truth, and the truth was Eurovision. The truth was that after all this discovery, I was like, I still love this concept so much. I still love this, the fan base as well that goes with the Eurovision bubble, like the connection that I, at least from being a Eurovision artist and learning to have a sort of or create a connection with a fan base. The fan base of Eurovision is just so personal and they're so in it, you know? And yeah, so I just came to the realization that this is where I come from and this is what I love. And I've done enough soul discovery now that I can go back and say, hey, I got something new to show. Yeah.
Yeah, we were actually wondering about that because, you know, a lot of artists, they write a song and then they want to enter Eurovision, and others, they want to go to Eurovision and then they write a song specifically for that. So
right.
You knew you wanted to go to Eurovision. Did Proud just feel right for Eurovision, or what made you so sure about this song being the one?
Yeah, well, once that Eurovision bug started to crawl under my skin and I was like, okay, whoa, I felt this sort of like I was like it was. One thing I felt was scared. I felt scared to go back into this game. And I was like, okay, if I feel this scared, I need to face that fear. Like if I'm that scared, that must be because I have a lot of emotions towards it. So it felt very true to me to make that decision and go, okay, if I write the right song for this, I'm gonna try and get back in. Yeah. So that was the process of me for me that started where I spent maybe like half a year from 2003 until like mid 24, where I wrote songs for the show. And so Proud was actually written on October 24 in 2023. And it was the first song I tried to write for that specific thing, to go back and to, you know, I wrote it about being proud of the journey that I had been on. And then after that, I started writing more songs with different producers and different songwriters and yeah. Stuff. I think we came up to maybe between 10, 15, maybe even 20. I don't even remember at this point, but a lot of songs that, you know, I was trying to like have be the one. And then summer 2024 came around and I looked at all the songs and I went back to the first one I had written and it was Proud. And I was like, I think that's the one. I kind of knew it when I wrote it, but I wanted to keep going to see if I could beat it. But that thing was just so genuine, and it was the first try to like really put down what the feeling for me was. So that was the one that just stood out most honest and most personal. And
it's impressive that you went with the first one.
I was like, really, all this work and then.
Yeah, so just to go back to the couch surfing game, because it for me, like I wish I had the balls to sell everything and go travel the world. Is there a cool story or a cool memory you have maybe from the travels, or while you maybe performed a gig while you were overseas that kind of resonates with you, or you think it'd be a fun story to tell?
I think the thing that resonates most with me is a few things. First of all, like people, that's the thing that the thing you just said, that you wish you had the balls to sell everything and just, you know, take that leap of faith. That's like the most general thing that people tell me when they hear about, you know, the story of couch surfing for that long and not having a home for that long. And the thing I can just say to that is it wasn't like I had planned to do this for so long, and it wasn't like I wasn't afraid or scared to not like to be without a home and all those things. But the thing that happened after I think 3 months is that I got so quickly used to not knowing where I was going to sleep the next day, so used to reaching out to people and starting to network and connect in that way, that it just became the most ordinary thing for me. And it turned into like an existence of like, even if I like through those 7 or 8 years and I had like a period where I could borrow an apartment for like 3 weeks or something, having like after like having couch surf for maybe 2 years and then having an apartment for 4 weeks felt like prison for me. So now I had turned the tables on myself, because now my new ordinary and my new daily life was not knowing where to go and not having those four walls, you know. So that's the thing that really resonates with me, that we can adapt ourselves so quickly to anything and to any like surroundings. It's like then the thing for me was it became hard to imagine a normal, like going back to the normal life again. So it's almost like I had to take a leap of faith to be like, okay, I'm ready to come back to being comfortable and having four walls. And I think if there's like one story of those things that stands out, it's like maybe I had 4 nights at a shopping mall in California. Where I slept on the floor for 4 days, like on a rug, and I was like hiding from the mall cup every night, like standing behind a wall and just waiting for the mall cup to close down the mall, and then when he was gone, I could literally like walk around the whole mall. It was like, I don't know if you've seen Night at the Museum with Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
It was very much that feeling. But the thing that stood out to me was the experience of sleeping on the floor, like without a bed, without like pillows and duvet covers, and just being so straightened out on the floor, like your flat back and just looking up into the ceiling. And I was like, I think that might have been into my 4th year of couch surfing. And I was like, this is it. This is it. This is the lowest I can physically get, you know, with my body. Like I am on the freaking ground. I cannot get further down. And I took that in a very symbolic kind of way. And I was like, okay, now I can start redefining myself. Now I can start, you know, sculpting my next chapter and figuring out, okay, where do we go from here? Because I was finally as low as I could get.
Literally. Wow. Yeah, it's a very interesting story, very poetic journey too that you've done probably. And I'm sure you've had a lot of creativity in that time too.
Yeah, for sure. It was a very romanticizing, like I romanticized I'm not going to call it self-pity, but like there's a certain thing, especially when you write and you're an artist, when you have it rough for you, you know, you're in the dirt, it's like, oh yeah, now I can write, you know, like, so at least for me, I romanticized those, like going down those blind alleys and not knowing, like, you know, if you're gonna be okay.
Gonna make some good songs, I'm sure about that.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, now the final, the Danish final is on March 1st. It's very soon. How are the preparations going? And it feels to us as Eurovision fans, you know, there are some other countries who release the songs and then they have like another 2 months until the final. And it seems like Denmark has a quite short period compared to that.
I mean, it used to be in Denmark that we weren't allowed to release the songs until the day of the competition, which I actually really liked because it kind of gave it this spin that you had to tune in and you had to like vote on the song that you, you know, sort of like caught on to within those
the first impression
of the show. Yeah, first impression. Instead of now, it's like it's like a freaking precedent election going on, you know, where the artists get to go out and some spend money on a campaign, some don't. And it just becomes this sort of like, okay, who's got the biggest reach to impress people or to convince people to vote? However, the positive thing about that is that we get to present our songs to radio before, which means that we have now a bigger chance of going on radio. And I think that's very positive because it will sort of signal to other artists and bigger and better and better artists that, oh, maybe I could use this platform, which essentially would mean that we get more like better creative artists to attend the show. Mm-hmm. So that's a cool thing. So, but I think a month is enough because otherwise it's just like long election campaign. But it's going well, and it's where my song is in high rotation on the biggest radio station in Denmark.
That's good.
So yeah, that's really nice, and
So you can be forgiven for not knowing the answer to this question because obviously you're in the bubble yourself, but have you been able to kind of peek outside of Denmark? Or like February for us has been just brutal because almost every country this year decided, oh, February. So we've had every Saturday, there's been like another four or five or six songs come out, you know, with all these shows. Have you had a chance to like kind of look outside of Denmark and see any of the other winners or any of the other songs, maybe some have caught your eye or you've heard some songs and went, oh yeah, that's cool?
I actually have not. I believe very much in the tunnel vision theory of you know, just focusing on building your own little thing and your own show, and then I look very much forward to listening to all of that once I've done my part. Yes, like so many things can go into your brain, especially with the Eurovision. Once you start looking into other acts and you also stumble upon others' opinion on about your song, and like, you know, it's such a frenzy of different opinions. And so I try to like, you know, protect myself a little bit in this time and not stumble upon too many hate comments and trolling leading up to the show. So
that's good. Don't get too much into comments into social media. That's very good.
Yeah, it could be emotionally challenging because, you know, even though there might be 100 great comments, you just need to read one bad, and that's the one that'll stick to your head for the rest of the day, you know? So that can kind of put you down, especially if you're an artist, you're an emotional person, you know? So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think Dave is very interested about your tour, especially through Canada still.
Yeah, well, that was our last question. So, you know, like after Dansk Melody Grand Prix, no matter what happens, you know. You mentioned some tour dates you've got in Canada after. Are there any more albums or more music coming? And yeah. If you win Eurovision, you know, are the poor people in Tilsonburg and Port Stanley going to be out of a show? You have to cancel on them if you win the Eurovision?
That's a good question. I do intend to stick to the promise of coming to Canada. Obviously, like, it's gotta be really, really huge and career changing if we do decide to maybe move some dates in Canada or whatnot. But yeah, so we're definitely intending on going through with those dates. And I can't wait. Like Port Stanley, that's where I'm gonna play in Port Stanley and some of those places. And it's such a full circle moment for me because back in 2011, after we had won the Danish pre-selection, we went straight on a Canadian tour, playing like the Toronto breakfast TV in Toronto, you know, those things. And so it's such a, again, personal thing, this whole full circle thing that's going on right now. And it's so funny to me that it would align in this way that I'm going back to Canada after 14 years and I'm doing the Eurovision after 14 years. And so it's just such a beautiful process right now. And I do have an EP coming out of like 4, maybe 5 songs, which was very important to me to have that lined up with the participation and with the coming back to the Eurovision so that it felt to me, but also to the receiver, that it felt more connected to my music and not so connected to just the haha ta-da I'm back, you know. But you know, having some depth in that decision was important for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, Tim, thank you so much for joining us today, and of course we wish you the best of luck for MGP and hopefully to see you in Basel as well.
But, yes, are you guys going to be there for Eurovision?
We're going to be in Basel, yes.
Awesome.
Then we can meet again, do another interview maybe.
By the way, Seppi, you have to look up Thomas Meilstrup because you look exactly like him.
Thomas
you have to check him out. Thomas Meilstrup, he's an artist. Yeah. And we did, right after 2011, we had won the show. I was invited on a TV show called Hidden Stars in Denmark. Mm-hmm. And I was picking these artists, unknown talents, and a young guy called Thomas Meilstrup.
You can see it.
Yes, look at that! Are you kidding me, Dave? Are you kidding me?
Wow. If he ever goes
a
to
real the German TV, doppelganger, that's hilarious.
Yeah. That's if we ever lose, if I'm ever cannot make it, I will contact him.
Yeah.
All right. But Tim, thank you so much once again. And if you have any final words or a message to all the Eurovision fans listening, then the stage is yours right now.
Speak now.
Even if you want to say something in Danish to the our Danish listeners that maybe you want to vote for you. Kind of.
Right on. Yeah. No, well, first of all, definitely just want to say thank you to anyone who's been tuning in since 2011. The also for like the push, because of course it's my own decision to come back, but it's been also because of the push that a lot of Eurovision fans have sent my way throughout the years of asking, hey, are you coming back? It'd be really nice to see you again on the stage, yada yada. So thank you for pushing that. And and to the Danish viewers who's going to vote, der vil jeg bare sige, let's make Grand Prix great again.
Those are the perfect final words. Thank you so much once again, Tim. And we will cross our fingers for you on March 1st. Best of luck.
Yay. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that was interesting. That was also... You know, usually it's so funny because usually some artists, you know, everyone we had on this podcast so far was very nice and very professional, but it never happened to me that somebody just looked at me and then he said, you know who you remind me of? And I was like, wow. So yeah.
That's the vibe I got from Tim during the episode, that like he obviously, you know, if you know his story, which you do now if you just listen to the episode, He's very humble, very down to earth, very organic. So like, he's just that type of, and I don't think he was trying to be rude or anything. Obviously, it popped in his head like, oh my god, you look like this guy. He's just, you know, somebody I'd like to take out for a beer, put it that way. I feel like he's like that type of soul that you'd want to do that with him.
The conversation felt very natural and on a very personal level, you know. It's not like we are the interviewers and he's the interviewee. We were just having a conversation, and that is, at the end of the day, what we want to reach.
Yeah, we wish him the best, and we can't wait to see how he stages Proud, I guess, very soon, in a week.
Yeah, it's crazy. Absolutely. And if you want to listen to more of our interviews, then please subscribe to our podcast. And you can also check out our socials at Building Bridges Pod and our website buildingbridgespod.com. And tune in next time again for our next interview. Bye-bye.